podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hello. So the second game week of the season has literally just finished and knees are jerking all over the place, it's safe to say. From the 4.0 loving via the likes of Livramento and Shane Duffy. Woo! Irish people are relevant, Anthony. And the growing movement to bye-bye-bye Lukaku following his debut goal for Chelsea. This evening blew it all out of the water, didn't it? With Benrahma bandwagon gathering pace and Antonio as well, for those who are not on that too. The smell in the air, basically, was that of the FPL season finding its groove. We are Who Got the Assist. I'm Tom at WGTA_FPL. My co-host is Anthony at FPL Stag. Our Instagram also is at WGTA.FPL. Make sure to give us a follow on those channels if you don't already. Subscribe to our podcast, whatever source you use, get your podcast. And if you've enjoyed this, I promise this will be the penultimate time I say this year. But if you've enjoyed this, or indeed have enjoyed anything we've done over the last 5 years, please give us a 5-star review wherever you listen, as these are hugely appreciated in terms of spreading the word of the podcast. And finally, the league code is 2IP43T. Beautiful. We're also on video. It'll never replace the audio, but just so you know, it's there in case you want to. I even do slideshows and all. Right now, it's not as fancy as other people's, but hey, you know, something I knock up after work and it does the job, doesn't it? Anyway, joined by Anthony, in different environment today, a different background, different backdrop, very intriguing. You're right.
Yeah, out and about, not quite recording from home today. So apologies to people if there's a slightly different microphone noise today. I don't have my usual microphone set up. I'm missing an adapter. I forgot an adapter for it. So unfortunately, I'm just using a regular pair of earphones with a microphone inside them. But yes, anyway, Tom, it was a good weekend of FPL. Enjoyed it. Cork didn't do so well in the All-Ireland Hurling Final. The first one since 2013. Still none since 2005, Tom. It's been a long drought. But anyway, the template, it's done nicely again, Tom, thankfully, which is good for pretty much all of us who are involved in this podcast and who listen to this podcast. Generally, we had some pretty decent football as well, which has led to plenty of talking points as well. And the fixtures shifts are very much on the horizon at this point, with big names and big sides showing signs of catching fire, or indeed actually catching fire. So that has really begged the question of whether we need to be aggressive this season in FPL to act against those. So last season, there was a relatively low 4 players achieved the 200 club: Bruno, Kane, Salah, and Son. But it seems like this year we're going to have a much, much bigger list of potential 200 club members. And that's why we're talking about this potential aggressive strategy to shimmy about our premiums to rack up the points as best as we can. I think last week I noted how I reckon that managers who successfully timed a move to Chelsea and Man City assets head of the template would likely be the ones who would get into the top 10k early, and who would then be in that position where it's much easier to hold on to your position in the top 10k than to find a way into it as the season develops. And so I think that's why it's worth considering this aggressive strategy to make it into those high ranks early, rather than kind of struggling for the rest of the season. Now, of course, you can't get all the premiums into your team, so inevitably you're sometimes going to have to look to the supporting cast Rikers to, you know, quote unquote, cover a team's bigger name. So we'd have to consider these players too as we look to aggressively tackle the first half of this season. We'll have all the regular segments of the show after the break as well, but we're starting with the game reviews as per usual.
Cool, yeah. I mean, it's fairly early, and obviously, you know, literally it's just finished, hence authenticity about this one. But unfortunately, we've had to use screen grabs for those watching from live rank in order to do this. But I mean, it has kind of just about come out okay. I think you just about beat me just because of that last minute Shufal assist. But I got 76 this week, and I was bailed out, frankly, by the Antonio and Benrahma show tonight. 24 points from those two players really helped me out. My defense did pretty well. So I had Mr. Sanchez in goal with the clean sheet, Trent and Tsimikas with the double digit hauls each. Tsimikas, oh, bye bye, baby. Wow, what an amazing asset, 4.017. And hopefully, it looks like he might rise as well. So it's not been 1 million profit. And Luke Shaw, housing two bonus points as well, off the back of basically corners and the big chance created. In midfield, Salah, Fernandes, basically. That whole sort of argument was moot, wasn't it, between which one was the best captain this week. Benrahma, obviously, tonight. And Harvey Barnes, another letdown, which is really, really annoying. I think I'm going to leave him for Norwich. Maybe I'll be swayed after speaking to you, Anthony. And up front, Another disappointment in Ivan Toney. We've got a question on him later on. We'll get on to him. Antonio and Danny Ings, who again kept up his ridiculously clinical outlook on life since being in Birmingham with that incredible overhead kick for an 8-pointer. So, yeah, I mean, all in all, as it is this kind of time of the season, 76 points saw me rise almost 60% in rank from 633K to 250K. But the season is young. The season is very young. But I think that last-minute shoe foul assist, Anthony, took you just beyond me, didn't it?
Yeah, a little bit further beyond you, if anything. I'm up to 84 points for this week, which is pretty solid going overall. It was unfortunate, really, with the shoe foul thing, because, of course, I have shoe foul in my side because I don't have Benrahma. And not having Benrahma is proving to be a bit more frustrating than I thought it was going to be. Anyway, I got 6 points from Sanchez in goal. I had the Alexander-Arnold-Tsimikas duo in the back line. I also had shoe foul coming in off the bench, actually, for Veltman, who I would have been starting. But, of course, he is, after missing this game week, and is now going to miss game week three as well. So he's a bit of a problem, unfortunately. In midfield, I had both Salah and Fernandes, also captain Salah. 6 points there is fine. It actually felt like a victory in the end, getting those 3 points doubled rather than 1 point doubled. Greenwood for 10 points and Rafinha, who came into my side for Pepe, with 7 points. Now, obviously, that felt an awful lot better right up until, again, the aforementioned Benrahma haul tonight. But at the same time, I'm happy with him in my side. Like you, Tom, then, Antonio Ings up front with Tony causing a bit of frustration. But overall, I think I really can't complain. I have a five-figure rank at the moment, just about, it seems. I'm not sure if that's going to continue to be the case when all of the bonuses and everything kind of comes through. But right now, if you had offered me a top 100K rank after two game weeks, I would have bitten your hand off ago. So with that in mind, I really can't complain.
Decent enough start. I don't think we're too far apart, are we? If that Rafinha move has worked for you. Just look at our objectives again. We're not going to parrot through these every single time. But I did meet a couple of my objectives this week. Just worth mentioning, I am holding myself accountable, as it were. So captaincy-wise, do what Mikel's algorithm tells me to do. I did. Captain Salah. Transfers. 50 situation, take a hit. I didn't need to take a hit this week. But my third objection was take a chance on form and buy bandwagoning players wherever possible and hope they turn to season-long picks. And I was like bifurcating between Greenwood and Benrahma for a little while. And I think after a while, this is before the Gundogan news he was fit, by the way. So I was temporarily in the mud, as it were, on social media for a little bit. Everyone was laughing at me, being like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And I did actually end up donating to charity as well, just kind of as a kind of a hedge bet, just to make sure that I wasn't too upset about what Gundogan did. But a yellow card in the blank. Excellent. Still give 50 quid to charity, because that's the kind of guy I am. It's a great outcome to have those 12 points from Benrahma, really. A big tick against following my objectives with this game week. Anthony, I've crossed out one of your playstyle ones because obviously it's you don't need to think about your game week one setup anymore. But I mean, was there anything here that you crossed this week with your captaincies and your other decisions?
I think they were all very achievable this week. So kind of no more than yourself. I captained with the algorithms or with the herd with my captaincy. So yep, that worked out fine. My transfers, it was don't be afraid to transfer out elite players if they've dropped off. I don't think that I would even count one game week as dropping off for either of those players. So I don't feel like I'm going to be compelled into doing something on that. As for the timings, I certainly didn't make my transfers late, late, late. As it turned out, we recorded on Monday night last week. Nicola Pepe was in line for a price drop and I made the transfer that evening before the prices went through. So I was 5 days earlier than I thought I was going to be with that particular transfer. So that was fine. It was obviously bringing in Rafinha. And then when we were talking about my other one, it's to do with play style, max 10 hits in total across the season. I'm still on zero and a max one hit in the first 5 game weeks. I haven't taken one yet. I would be in line to take one. I've already made a transfer, as we're going to find out later. But I don't see myself making that one hit. If anything, I'm more likely to wildcard than I am to take a hit, I think, at this point.
Right, so let's move on to the next part of the pod then. And it is the market forces, of course. It's our kind of weekly look at the moves and shakes in transfer market. Now, Anthony, what have you been noticing thus far with managers buying and selling behaviours?
Buying behaviours are pretty much people going after the points that came in the last few days. So the most bought player, yeah, imagine. The most bought player is Romelu Lukaku. Nearly a quarter of a million transfers in as it stands. And we are only at Monday night. So that's pretty serious market movement for him. He is still 11.5 right now. It wouldn't be surprising if he finds his way to 11.6 before the week is out. The second most bought player is actually Tsimikas, who is en route. He's still 4.1 as we record. He is expected to be 4.2 when you wake tomorrow. So probably when this pod goes out, he will be a 4.2 defender at that point. That's great for those of us who bought him originally, because that means that we now have profit made when we sell him at 4.1, or well, he's 4.2, but we'll get 4.1 for it. Shane Duffy is chasing him. He's the third most bought player. He's already up to 4.1 as well, and probably en route to 4.2, 187,000 transfers in as it stands. Great to see Shane Duffy getting a chance in the Premier League again for Brighton and making an impact with that chance. It's kind of a heartwarming story if you look into how his year has gone, and I'm really happy for him on that level, on a personal level, not just because he's Irish. Then when you look at the other transfers in, Danny Ings, and then the likes of kind of Benrahma, Jota, Calvert-Lewin, Reece James are all kind of well transferred in the six figures, let's say, for transfers in, but not the market leaders.
Yeah, at the time of recording, Antonio, 80,000 new owners, and Benrahma, 75,000 new owners. That is bound to increase because people probably look at them and say, oh, hang on a minute, they've scored loads of points. Oh, hang on a minute, they've got Crystal Palace at home next, and then Southampton away. On the other side of it, though, I mean, the likes of, you know, Ben White and Ivan Toney particularly bearing the brunt of angry owners' disdain.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's patchy when it comes to Toney and with White. But then after that, I would say the sales out are quite patchy. So both White and Toney have been transferred out by about 150,000 managers right now, which is very substantial when you consider kind of that the third most transferred out player is actually John Stones with just over 100,000 transfers out. So those two players are kind of well off in the lead. And look, it does make sense. I think Toney was in so many squads that you're going to find that, you know, there's going to be a lot of people selling him after two blanks, no matter what, whether you think that that's a little bit premature or not. So yeah, 150,000 transfers out for him. I wouldn't be surprised if he finds his way to a price drop by the end of this week. Ben White is still 4.5 right now. He is now orange flagged, which means that he'll be a little bit slower to drop. He's supposed to drop according to a lot of forecasts on Sunday night. It didn't happen. It'll be interesting to see if it does happen now over the next 7 days or so. After that though, Tom, I wouldn't necessarily say there's anything too interesting in there. Like the likes of Jadon Sancho is the most sold midfielder, followed by Salah and Havertz. But these are kind of, you know, players that arrive into sides. I wouldn't necessarily say that they were going anywhere near the template.
Yeah, and hiding a game week one sort of mistake, perhaps. Right, let's move on to the main topic this week, which is simply, should we adopt a more aggressive strategy this season? I think growing out of those market forces, Lukaku rising in price, underlines just how this question of playing aggressively has been thrown to sharp focus. I guess it's born out of an observation made a few times, and Anthony mentioned it earlier in his kind of preamble, that this season has a potential character about it that we both sort of pinpointed, identified. In some ways, it's a classic WGTA question in terms of us looking at grand strategy rather than saying, pick this guy for next week. Other pods are available covering this. We'll do more tactical stuff in the questions as well. But here we're going to be providing a more zoomed out, bigger picture way of looking at fantasy football as the season kind of goes. But overall, as Anthony mentioned, there are more 200 club nominees than ever before. What is 200 club? You may be asking, shouting into your earphones. Don't do that on public transport. People think you're weird. But if you're new to the pod or you need a reminder, the 200 club is an exalted group of players who reach this elite kind of threshold of 200 points per season. Over the last five seasons, we've seen an average of six 200-point players in 200 club. That's 5.8 if we're being nitty. But we've seen wild swings over the past few campaigns. So that 5.8 is kind of trying to make the most of like a bell curve, effectively. Like last season, just four players, Anthony mentioned, Bruno, Kane, Salah and Son made 200 club, compared with eight players in consecutive years, 2019-20 and 2018-19. And in 2017-18, it swung back to just three players, Salah, Sterling and KDB. And in 2016-17, it was six players. So that's back in the midst of time, really, with the likes of Alexis Sanchez and a guy called Dele Alli, were the top two scoring players in FPL. Dele Alli scoring Kane that year. But I guess, Anthony, as you mentioned, last season was a bit different to the ones before. And that definitely created a different sort of sense of how we played it and how constricted many people were in terms of they were chasing and trying to best their rank, didn't it?
Yeah, Tom, this does look like a very different season, as you say, with the just the kind of sheer span of premiums that we need to take into account coming into this year. And so whilst, as you say, usually what we would have said was that you would have to be quite careful with transferring out your elite players, I don't think that that accepted norm of patience is necessarily going to be something that we should be taking for granted this year. That's definitely being challenged by the conditions that we have. Now, like, there is a certain caveat here, like when it comes to players who necessarily we might say are 200 club nominees right now. I think Jadon Sancho or Kai Havertz are classic examples that you mightn't think will make it there. But at the same time, I think we have to, when we're planning our transfers and looking ahead like 8 game weeks right now, we need to consider them at minimum. Like, it would be silly to not wonder whether they might actually merit our consideration going forward.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. So, I mean, there are loads of 200 club candidates this year, and there's a far more kind of packed premium area. The likes of Salah, Mane, Lukaku, Bruno, Son, Kane and KDB all come to mind as sitting in that premium area, as well as the likes of Vardy, Sancho, as you mentioned, Sterling, even likes of Grealish and former 200 club member, as I mentioned earlier, on Dele Alli, could all fit into that 200 club. They could all be candidates to make it, plus Trent too, we'll speak about later. With all these guys in with a shout, we saw FPL socials pee their pants, effectively, when Lukaku did a goal. And as we see through the market forces data and a lot of wildcards flying around, like, we'll see some impact straight away from another premium coming on the line, and people thinking, oh, we can disrupt this sort of Salah, Bruno kind of orthodoxy we've seen. As Anthony mentioned as well, like, there's a huge accepted norm, I think, that being patient with your premiums is a thing. And that could be challenged a lot this year. Just thinking about the list of players again. Amazing managers like FPL General, Matthew Jones, Joe from Fans Football Scout and Lucy Heinert. There's a very kind of patient, persistent play with your team, trusting in your assets to deliver, which works. It does year on year. Last year particularly. But having all these players who could enter the 200 club, in prior years we've had it as well, when we had the kind of 8 players in that 200 club. Maybe we were scarred by last season a little bit, perhaps, where any walk outside of a template was slapped hard. Like, I remember selling Kane and Son in game week 7 or so on my wild card, my rank plummeted, as I'd hope KDB would pick up the slack. Ouch. But like, I think maybe there is kind of a possibility, at least, to be able to move outside of the template and think to yourself, you know what, I can set up differently. You know, maybe this year, it may not be the case that we saw last year, where you've got to have those 4 players, you basically will keep them all year. Maybe there is an alternative strategy open to people, which wasn't available last year, to be able to jump around a little bit and to be able to kind of just say, you know what, in this group, Anthony, I'm going to play around. I'm going to kind of just target the fixtures. I mean, obviously, form's always going to be there, but you can target the fixtures and kind of say, you know what, I know that, you know, this is going to happen next. So game week 7, for example, Lukaku's about to run into a great run of fixtures. So that means that I just give up on whatever premium I have because this guy is going to come in and this guy's going to be my captain.
Yeah, there are just so many options that are worth considering. And as you say as well, there are very specific fixture shifts that are so identifiable. If you just go onto the FPL website, for example, click into any players and those lovely greens and greys and things. But what you start to see here is that, let's say for Tottenham, we have one coming in right now between game weeks 3 and game weeks 4. And so this is why we're seeing a lot of jittery fingers hanging over wildcard buttons, because getting Son or even Kane is starting to look quite viable. Liverpool are about to turn the corner onto a pretty good run between kind of game weeks 4 to 6 into 8. Man United have a pretty good run between game week 3 to 7, which means that I think the double up between Bruno and Greenwood is very much viable for another few weeks, as long as you feel that Greenwood is going to keep his place. And then kind of looking a little bit further down the line, I think what's becoming part of the argument for not wildcarding right now is because Chelsea have a very good run starting from game week 7 that runs through almost to Christmas, and City likewise have a good run that starts in game week 8 and runs pretty much to that first half, end of the first half of the season as well. So there's quite a few options kind of coming into view, and especially when it comes to those Chelsea and City assets. And this kind of links back to my prelude at the start of this podcast, and that if you can time your run to pick up the likes of Lukaku, the likes perhaps of Havertz and Mount, and certainly then with City, you've got the KDBs of this world, who we've just discussed has previously been a 200 club inductee. You could say the same for Sterling if he finds his form. And then Grealish, who's obviously just arrived there. And at 8.0, I think, is very accessible for our teams.
As you said, you can look through, and anyone can do this. So we've ended on game week 3 to 19 here. You can look through and you can find the following set of timings, or the times Anthony's just described, for players in 200 club. Identify the players you may want and figure out a formative plan. Now, a fun exercise you can do, obviously things can change, prices will change, and some premiums will simply be fixture proof. But something we can do to see if you can have an aggressive roadmap is to check where in the calendar you may wish to make changes. Now, I know that Anthony's laughed at this in the past for correct reasons. I encouraged him to, you know, just saying, oh, you know, game week 3, you're going to be buying this guy in for this guy, but only if this guy rises 0.1 and then I can kind of facilitate it and make it all work. And but only if this guy's not really working. But you can plan that thing effectively. So imagine, for example, you start with Son and Bruno now. for 2 weeks, because as Anthony mentioned, Spurs have got Watford and Crystal Palace. So in this kind of hypothetical situation, I wildcarded or I've done Salah to Son, and Bruno has Wolves Newcastle. Then when Son's fixtures stiffen in game week 5, you then bring in Salah or Mane for him. They've got Crystal Palace and Brentford. Then you wildcard in game week 7, you buy Son back. Games, they've got Aston Villa, Newcastle and West Ham. Swap from Bruno and Salah to Lukaku and probably Grealish over KDB, as both Chelsea and City have a great run to game week 19, as Anthony's mentioned. Maybe, you know, that's your solid kind of few. Maybe you sell off Son again in game week 10. Maybe you buy back Salah and Mane at that point because they get a really good run then too. Game week 14, you've got a bit of an issue because then United have a good run. So maybe you have to fit in Sancho, maybe Mason Greenwood type, supplement your Salah, Son and Grealish core. It's all possible to do. And it's all something that, like, obviously there's loads of context you've got to build in. Like, I wasn't going to put my own team through a team planner just to kind of show you how it can be done. If you head over to the YouTube, you can see kind of a really basic plan that I've put together. And you know what, even though this is all pie in the sky, you know, type dream world stuff, the sort of thing, as I mentioned, Anthony's parodied a lot in the past, and I'm not by any means saying this is something I would do, but you can plan to cover in all of the good fixtures with the premiums this year. And there is a possibility, if you have a remorseless focus on fixtures, to basically play aggressively in that way. But I mean, Anthony, any thoughts on a plan like that? I know, obviously, the obvious cynicism is one thing. But is this a viable idea? Or would you still be kind of espousing the sort of, you know, caution, you know, stick with your kind of men sort of thing, given the context we've just mentioned?
I guess my view is always a little bit paradoxical on these things, because I kind of laugh at the idea of making a plan out like this. But at the same time, I wouldn't necessarily be the type to be preaching caution when it comes to transfers with premiums either. So I kind of fall between two stools in that respect. And I guess that was to my detriment last year, and that I was still happy to take the gamble and take out those premiums and then suffer at the hands of the template continuing to batter us.
You've got an objective this year to do literally what I'm putting in
front of you here.
This plan, couldn't I?
I wouldn't quite go that far. But what I would say about this plan, and as you say, Tom, I would almost encourage people who are listening on the audio, if they want to have a look at this plan, to go forth and have a look at it on the YouTube. But what's interesting about it is that, okay, first of all, it only uses 4 free transfers. So it does actually allow for people to do other things. Like, usually the plans that I'm parodying are plans that use up every single free transfer all the way along. And this doesn't necessarily do that. Like, this is a plan that goes from game week 3 to game week 19 and only looks at using 4 free transfers. So there's a certain level of realism to it that isn't necessarily in these plans usually.
And the wild cards in 7.
I was about to say that it does rely on the wild card, and that is a bit of an issue. It is obviously a bit of a detrimental thing, because once you use the wild card, you don't have it. I'm going to discuss wild cards again in a minute, but I guess at the same time, it is still a detrimental factor if you're using the wild card, because you don't have it again. A few problems with this, and maybe I'm talking in the very near term, by selling up on Liverpool assets in these coming few weeks, and I think this would be the real focus for people. Tom's plan here advocates selling your Salah now, basically, to get in your Son, effectively. And that means you have no Liverpool player, presumably, for Leeds away in game week 4. And later on, with the hokey-cokey that he does with the wildcard and things, he ends up with no Liverpool player again for game week 8. Now, and we'll probably come to this, you could plan to cover the likes of Salah with your TAAs and your Jotas, and you would be doing that using the wild card, let's say, within this plan, so that's useful. But the fact that maybe Trent Alexander-Arnold isn't dealt with in this plan, I think, is something that kind of almost needs to be focused on as a headline thing.
I've got data on this, I've got it all covered in a minute.
Yes. Oh. And so it's like, but it's almost like he is so fundamentally important to teams that it's almost like, if you're considering premium roulette, you always have to remember that Trent Alexander-Arnold can keep up with pretty much every premium in terms of returns. I also wonder with this plan, if we're going a little bit too long without City cover, going to game week 7, if the City machine is starting to purr.
It's rotation though, isn't it? That's why want to just let it be. Like, just kind of think, well, you know what? There's going to be a smaller number of people who are jumping in. By game week 7, we can see if it's the likes of Grealish who are getting the consistency of starts. And, you know, part of me thinks he might. And I think that kind of just to bring this on, the fact that we've just mentioned kind of the likes of Grealish, we will come on to Trent as part of that for just a second. We will come on to him. But the likes of Grealish, we also mentioned Mason. I think this is kind of going to throw the focus a little bit on finding values and the importance of Rikers or Robins. I call them Rikers because I'm a Star Trek nerd, but a Robin is another analogy. So, you know, Riker is obviously the first officer in Star Trek Next Generation. You may, you always want the Picard, but sometimes you have to settle for second choice like this guy. You know, for Star Trek phobes, I mean, you got Batman, you got Robin. Sometimes you want Batman, but you can't afford it, so you got to go for the Robin outfit. And I think that this year, if you think about it, we've mentioned a few of these players already, Sancho, Grealish, Havertz. These players, I think, could play a heightened role because, as you said, Anthony, you know, we're trying to fit in the likes of Salah, Lukaku, maybe try to fit in Son as well because he's 10, you know, he's a proxy sort of premium who, as I said, into preseason, he's a premium without quite the premium price. I think these players are going to be very important this year in terms of can they cover the main guy in their teams? And I'll always back Talisman Theory, for example. But in these situations where we've got a multitude of high-priced talisman, it probably is fine to go with the Riker and perhaps as well in other spaces focus on talisman from lesser clubs. Like all it needs is a Jimenez at full pilt. Or, you know, Benrahma to become a latter-day Matthias Pereira. And we're all good, aren't we?
It is to an extent, but I feel like inevitably we end up focusing on top five and top six team players. And so whilst somebody like potentially a Benrahma could become a player that we'd want in our sides, I think people are going to always feel the pain of the big premium from the big team hitting. And they're going to want to get that. And so I feel like you'd be a brave person, even if you're returning the points as you need them, to not feel yourself getting a little bit itchy, yeah, wanting to move to get the likes of Salah or indeed a coverage pick like a Jota into your side. And I think that's what's really interesting about this season is that most of the elite players that we would often be looking at have a cover. And so with Bruno, that's obviously Greenwood. It could well be Sancho as well going forward. They're midfielders as well, so there's kind of that direct comparison. They get the same amount for goals. Salah, you have Mane, but you know Mane is the same price. It's like
maybe Jota in the Cup of Nations. We've got Trent just a moment.
Yes, but Jota, I guess, yeah. What he doesn't have compared to Trent is, of course, he is a midfielder, so he doesn't get defensive points, and so there's like that direct kind of comparator with him. But the thing about Jota is that he so frequently has underlying data which is not quite at Salah's level, but quite close to it. And so Jota, in and of himself, it's not inconceivable that he could be a 200 club player. It would be a surprise because it would require finishing that he hasn't shown. But yeah, it's not inconceivable either at the same time. Like, if you're a player who is playing for a team like Liverpool when they're on song, you can very accidentally find your way to 20 goals in a season. And that could quite easily happen to him. Lukaku, I think it's different because Mount, Havertz, etc., they, especially Mount, has shown that they can create chances. When they needed to score goals, they weren't necessarily the goal scorers that were required. Now, Havertz, I know, had a very pockmarked season last year, has shown it in bursts that he is a good goal scorer. And unfortunately, yeah,
and at Leverkusen as well.
And at Leverkusen, previously in the Bundesliga, he was double figures for goals, etc. Yes, but we haven't seen it in the blue shirt yet. And we still haven't seen it in the two games this season. I know he was quite close to getting one against Arsenal, but didn't finish it with the chip towards the end. But at the same time, it still hasn't happened for him. Lukaku is exactly what that Chelsea team needed. And I feel like, unlike Bruno and Salah, he kind of stands alone as this potential talismanic force in that Chelsea side that isn't the same. I think he's harder to cover.
Yeah,
I think
Mount, you can't. He's less likely to be cannibalised by somebody else.
Correct.
Maybe Salah is just a slight level above Mane. There's always that chance that Mane could do that, which is why they priced him at 12. And I agree, like, across the spectrum of this kind of players that I mentioned earlier on, that the Riker or the Robin isn't quite there. I think with Man City, though, I think that probably is an example of a team where, you know, the card, I think, is a super fit Kevin De Bruyne. But the thing is that he's had one Yaya Toure season sandwiched between two Diaby seasons, effectively. I think that's where there's a certain level of interest. I don't think that having somebody like Mahrez, for example, is worth the money of what you lose from him not playing one week and you have to rely on your 4.5 million defender coming off the bench, or this week. Him getting lucky with him and him scoring off the bench. It was Norwich, to be fair. But someone like Torres and maybe Grealish at 8 is kind of just about on the level. And, you know, for the kind of the massive amount of money that's been spent on him, maybe it's very logical, sort of maybe a too logical point, but he's got the excellent talent, bought for a large amount, and Pep surely wants to be playing him as much as possible to get him sort of tuned up to what he expects from a player like him. That he played well versus Norwich, and I think that probably is enough for me to think he's worth inclusion at least.
I think this is the thing with City, is that you can take an expensive risk, and that's what it feels like right now. Both Sterling and KDB would be kind of in the Mane mold of, it's entirely possible that they will have a brilliant season and we'll react if so. But right now, when you look at that City team, you're like, okay, Mahrez at 9 million, he is in and of himself a 200 club player potentially, but if he gets the minutes and things, but you can, you know, maybe offset slightly and go for a Torres if he continues to start through the centre. I think Pep has been quoted kind of saying that he has a typical kind of Pep quote. He was saying that he has the qualities of a striker, or he thinks like a striker. He had a quote along those lines when talking about Torres. You could also say the same maybe for obviously Grealish, and Grealish could be kind of everything that we've been looking for in a consistent player in that City side who can continue to play. I still fear that Pep Guardiola is going to be a factor with him, especially when the Champions League kind of kicks off. I think if you want to get Grealish into the swing of any competition, it's the Champions League, not necessarily the Premier League. Actually, though, at City, and you might laugh, but especially if they don't make any signings coming into this, the end of this transfer window, Gabriel Jesus at 8.5, certainly out of position in the negative sense, playing on the wing, not as a forward, could actually be quite a useful pick.
Could be amazing value, couldn't he?
He could. At 8.5, he actually could be, because he does provide a bit of a goal-scoring threat. But as we saw against Norwich, and now Norwich were so bad at defending from on their left flank. So Jesus was just having a field day down the right. Like, it was kind of embarrassing. Daniel Farke was even saying afterwards, we worked on this all week, it shouldn't have happened. They were done by the exact same goal twice, which isn't good at all.
Yeah,
but it was, no, but Jesus was a huge part of that. He was the guy executing the, you know, the classic City cutback on the right-hand side. And that's pretty promising to see. And I think even Pep, in the midst of praising, of all people, Gabriel Jesus' parents for the child that they've raised, he also mentioned how he thinks that Jesus kind of has all of the qualities of a winger. And indeed, he did play as a winger kind of in a previous life before he came to Man City. That was kind of what he was, and he kind of had to be converted into a bit more of a striker as time went on. So it is quite interesting to see that maybe he may find a home again in the City side, just as it seemed like he was about to fall out the exit door.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, great. But I think we've mentioned him a couple of times, but there's actually two big losers in all this, not just Trent. In a kind of, if we are reverting to a kind of quasi old school, poor money forward kind of strategy, there's always going to be someone or something that falls between the cracks. And when we're speaking about this, it became clear that we actually lose out on a couple of men here if we're trying to construct a team with, say, Salah, Lukaku, and a couple of Rikers. That's Trent and Robertson, or a big defence. It's a fascinating one, really, because, you know, Trent's already on most chances created this season. Second half of last season, he created the most chances. He had the highest XA, and he was second to West Brom's Pereira in terms of points scored for all players. Reaching back for time in his breakout season 2018-19, he's averaged 185 points over the last three seasons, and so has Robertson. But if we're trying to construct a team with the guys who will be grabbing the headlines, being our captain picks, like those are the people we may kind of naturally gravitate towards, are we naturally losing out elsewhere? So basically what I did is look at this, is I looked at, a few things. So I looked at over the last 3 years, for many of our protagonists in the upper reaches, you know, how many points they'd scored and kind of their price as well. So players I looked at were Salah, Mane, Vardy, Kane, Son, Lukaku, KDB, plus Robert and Trent. And over the last 3 years, in terms of points, totals, in terms of the average, Trent and Robertson near the bottom here, unsurprisingly, because all these other players kind of scored slightly more. I mean, it's still kind of, you know, really elite company, to be fair. You know, so the likes of, Son are just above them. The likes of Kane, 187 points on average, they're 185. Really Sterling, Salah and Mane, the ones who are really far above them. But what's really interesting, actually, I didn't have time to do a full nick and remove things like appearance points, so I was a little bit lazy. But to do an indication of just how good these guys are, what I did then was I divided price by points for this group of players. And lo and behold, what you see is that Trent and Robbo are comfortably first and second in terms of points per cost, which is an indicator of value. At least it can be refined a lot, and it's something that we've done in the past, something I didn't have time to do today. Interestingly, KDB comes out as really terrible value, but the full order of kind of valuable players in the 200 club over the last kind of few years in this kind of select group are Trent, Robertson, Son, Vardy pretty much together, then Salah and Mane, and below that Sterling, Kane, Lukaku and KDB. Just note Lukaku is when he was at Everton and United last time he was in the Premier League. Now I'm not suggesting these guys are still a must own and hold. That's to neglect the context that we will need captain picks. We need to be able to factor in ownership. We're not running zombie teams or anything like that. But I think kind of as we've both kind of hinted throughout this, it may kind of highlight something we may just miss if we are too busy running off the headlines, because these kinds of players are going to provide a foundation every week of points. You know, this week we saw it with Trent and his Robertson's analog Shimikas, both giving you double-digit returns, which provide the platform for the rest of your game week to kind of build on. Anthony, if we're going gung-ho without these premium defenders, do you think it is a big risk?
I think it's a massive risk, and it's only because when you think about how much bending over backwards you'd be doing to try and get a 7.5 or 7 indeed midfielder or forward into your side if you thought that they were going to return 200 points. That's the thing when it comes to those players. Yes, they provide value, and what's kind of frustrating about them is because they're obviously in a different position, it's harder to escape them if you feel like you need to, let's say, get in some other supporting cast, Riker, Robin, whatever you want to call it, player in. You know, if you want to get a Jota in, for example, or a Greenwood, it's two transfers to move it from Trent to them. But at the same time, I think that's not necessarily a negative. Like, I think it should be, you should be quite happy to have a set and forget in somebody like Trent Alexander-Arnold and go with it. And I personally, unless Liverpool's defence shows signs of having dropped off a cliff, they've obviously had two good results defensively so far, but not without some palpitations. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens when they're against sides who are maybe a little bit more clinical. But for now, at least, I'm quite content to keep Trent and wouldn't be surprised if he found his way into my side all 38 game weeks of the season.
Yeah, I mean, all wild cards that I've done to try to fit in Lukaku, Salah and Bruno, for example, mean that your biggest defender is probably maybe a Diaz, if you're lucky. Mm-hmm. If not, you're looking at, 5-5, 4.5 and a couple of 4.0s. It's kind of like a risk of all of this could be that we forget kind of the lessons of the last few years, which have kind of shown the value that you can get from the defence in the rush to get points every week. And you'll be riding that roller coaster when in fact you could have got a steady kind of drip of points from these valuable players.
Yeah, this is it, Tom. It's just, I think I'd be very, very, very fearful of running away from those points when they're there. It's like, yes, there's everything to be said for adopting an aggressive strategy this season. And there are rotating cast members, I think, though, that with, they're such that you don't necessarily need to compromise throughout your squad completely because you can still cover to an extent in this team. And maybe to do that, I feel like three premiums is about as much as you can do. Now, you've just been saying how even to do that, you kind of had to make some deals with the devil. I think you can just about do it with three premiums, but you're starting to squeeze yourself. I think three is just about as much. Like if you start talking about four, it's like you're into la-la land in terms of like the extra players that you have on your side. And just maybe it's worth saying as well, history would suggest that you should just keep Bruno and Salah, really. And I'm not sure if I really want to avoid that. And like you could even double up on them too with your supporting cast members. Like, for example, just to pick United's fixtures from game week 14 to 27, they basically face almost nobody worth talking about in that whole entire quarter of a season period. It's ridiculous. And then as I was saying with Lukaku, I think that they're just the Chelsea supporting cast members, as good as they are. Mason Mount is a brilliant, brilliant player. I don't think, as it stands right now, we've seen enough to suggest that those players can cover him. He is the one that I'm most fearful of.
Fair enough. I think it's definitely on the cards, isn't it? Like, if we turn to the central question, should we adopt a more aggressive strategy this season? It's certainly on the cards to do so. Obviously, it will take cojones to try to steal a march on those more conservative managers by trying to do something just slightly off the off-piste. And last year, it did not work. And everybody kind of who did try to do something last year was utterly kind of scarred by it. But could it happen this year with more players who are potentially able to do a job for you, even if it does mean taking a chance with the likes of Greenwood over the likes of Bruno? I think that this year could be really interesting in that regard. And I think this year there is potential to break out of kind of quite a patient sort of strategy into something which is a bit more sort of risky, week to week, living hand to mouth. I think that actually generally is actually quite more, a bit more exciting, being a bit of a nomad. But Anthony, I mean, what do you reckon to it all in the end?
See, this is it. I think we really do need to consider this aggressive strategy. And I guess I've kind of set out my stall on it completely. And so what I'm thinking about is like, what is the ultimate act of, you know, quote unquote aggression in this? And that is probably to use the wild card. And you have to think, let's say last season, for example, what was the right thing to do with the wild card? And Fantasy Football Fix, this isn't a plug, but that's where I found this data. They have a pretty good thing that allows you to look back on strategies season by season that managers have taken. And in the top 50 managers last season, 31 out of that top 50 used their wild card during the first international break. So there was like a clear indication of when you should wildcard. Okay. And that what that indicates, though, I think, is that a template formed, those people acted early, got it, and then worked with it and continued to go. Like the season before that, only 21 of the top 50 had gone before the international break, but actually only 6 of that top 50 were using their wild card just during that international break. So, you know, even a season earlier, it's very different. And then Fix also has data on the all-time top 50, so, you know, managers who are in the Hall of Fame or whatever you want to call it. Last season, we saw that those top 50 managers, they acted when they saw that there was a template forming, and they acted aggressively early on. So 17 of that, you know, all-time top 50 had actually used their wild card just before the first international break. So it would be effectively, you know, after this week, wouldn't it be, in this season? So it's kind of interesting to see that 17 of the top 50, and then another kind of 11 of them followed just after the international break. So you were talking about well over half, if not, you know, moving into the 30s of the top 50 all-time managers had used their wildcard in that kind of first 4 weeks, but quite a lot of them went before the international break. And what we're seeing is that, so even in a season where we thought you shouldn't be aggressive, all of those managers acted aggressively to kind of set themselves up for a complete distinct lack of aggression for the next, like, basically 30 game weeks. And so
you front load your violence to get us up the pile.
This is almost it. Yeah. Climb to the top of the pyramid and then start to, you know, slash down with your bayonet or your sword rather than kind of fight your way up the ladder. And that's actually, it is quite interesting to see that. So, you know, maybe even an aggressive strategy is what usually tends to work. And, you know, this kind of idea of holding a wild card until you've got like 8 weeks of data or even 6 weeks of data hasn't proved itself to necessarily be a successful strategy either this year or the year before. Now, the year before, indeed, it was a little bit more split, but, you know, about half, let's say, of the all-time top 50 had kind of gone in just around the first international break. They certainly weren't waiting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe this year, but there'll be more ways to dodge the bayonets of people kind of keeping you off the top of the pyramids because of what we've said about there being more options there. But no, that's really interesting as being the logical end of how do I play aggressively. I'm going to be very aggressive very early when everybody's saying game week 7, that's when I'm going to wild card. You get 3 or 4 weeks and you hope that you got the template 3 or 4 weeks and people will be trying to hold fast to that plan. Wildcard in game week 7 when Lukaku all turns over and Chelsea's fixtures come good and City's fixtures come good. Trying to get on that early, riding out a few poor fixtures, but basically having those players, I could understand that. And maybe that could be good to, as I said, dodge the bayonets of people trying to keep you down from that point. Last year, we saw the top of the pyramid basically being a sealed kind of hermetic sort of block, didn't we? So maybe this time, maybe a bit different. I think let's leave that there because we've obviously got a couple of questions on wild cards later. We can kind of dip into this more, but no, very interesting. It'd be really interesting to see how this season does turn out. But I do think it is a valid strategy this year and a valid alternative strategy this year to not kind of go with the herd and do your own thing because there are a few players in that upper bracket who could break you in to where you want to be in those upper echelons. Right, let's take a break there and we'll move on to the correspondence and questions after this.
Who got the assist?
Of Cool, so we're back, and it's the time to go into the correspondence this week. And for YouTubers, you've got a treat because you can watch a nice little graphic. But yeah, I mean, this is our section. Well, Anthony can introduce it, but our section where we ask the great and the good of the FPL community to write into us to give us something to debate.
Yes, Tom, that is exactly what the correspondence section is. It is very much the chance for people to write in with their thoughts, queries, addendums, clarifications, whatever it might be on previous podcasts or indeed just what's going on in the FPL world. People write in usually to gottheassist@gmail.com, but given the slot is so versatile, when people are trying to do something a bit innovative that requires another method of sending, we'll try and work it out. But this week, it's Ray Gooner who has come in by the standard whogottheassist@gmail.com email method. You'll find Ray on Twitter at @FPLRayGooner_49. So his email went as such. This did come in pre-season, so just there's an element of it that maybe just dates it, but you'll hear what I'm on about. Hey guys, hope you're well. I'd like to look at the use of last year's seasonal data versus using short samples at the beginning of the season to assist in decision making. How far into the new season do you think we can use data to draw meaningful conclusions and identify potential longer term trends? As an example, Brighton last season, statistically on XGC, were a fantastic defense. What happens after three game weeks in the new season if they rank 18th for XGC? Do we go with the new season, albeit a short sample, that Brighton are a bad defense, or rely on last season's data? In addition to this, based on previous seasons, when do you think we have enough data to make an informed decision on wildcards in the new season? To summarize, it'd be awesome to get your opinion on the use of previous seasonal data versus short samples at the beginning of the season, and which you believe is to be the most appropriate to assist in FPL decision making, and also when you believe we have enough data to make meaningful conclusions, potentially identifying trends. Thanks so much, and sorry it's a long one. Cheers, Ray. Ray, we appreciate long emails, and indeed, whilst Brighton are doing well so far this season defensively, the point still stands that, you know, they had good data last season and they weren't necessarily matching it. This year, they have two weeks, the data remains good, and they are now matching it. And should we necessarily be drawing conclusions from that we weren't able to draw last season? So it totally holds up as a question.
Absolutely. I mean, oh, it's tough, isn't it? But I think the reality is we need to react to what's in front of us. I guess we're always looking for signs in the data as it is. But at this point in the season, as we said last week, you know, we're a data-driven podcast without much data. At this point, I feel like anything we see in the data needs to be accompanied by a solid eye test. Basically, anything I draw conclusions about right now. So last year, for example, I bought James in game week one for Kai Havertz. I did that because Kai Havertz was awful in his debut, whereas James, the data said he created a lot, and from watching him, he created a lot. And for actually scoring points, I thought that was worthwhile. Last week, it was a little bit easier because Benrahma obviously did very well in the second half versus Newcastle. And I kind of thought, well, you know what? Of him and Greenwood, perhaps he would be the one to do the job, and his next kind of three fixtures were probably a tiny bit better. Less rotation kind of chance as Lingard goes there. So I thought he was, again, a very similar kind of one where his data was okay, but the eye test in the second half against Newcastle was good enough to maybe kind of go there. The data itself, seasonal data in general, on a one season level, it can be a bit crap, actually. I know kind of why you'd say, for example, why you look at Brighton, yeah, last season, a fourth low for XGC, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's essentially kind of cold data. Like if you want to look at it over the course of the last few seasons, like we looked at earlier on in terms of 200 club, or looked at in terms of that kind of very, very basic points per cost thing to make a case for quantifying, you can kind of do it. But if you say last season X happened, people can always come back with, yeah, but remember Y and Z, those kind of particular sort of contextual cues about last season. And last season is particularly, and the season before that, was a COVID season. So, you know, data then is always going to have to be in terms of that, effectively. I guess in terms of when I'm going to start using data, we'll start peppering it in every now and again. But I think 6 weeks is when I'll kind of start really kind of trying to judge things on the data a little bit. And we've got kind of three home games, three away, blah, blah, blah. But I've got to be conscious to remember, and this should be implicit rather than something we make explicit. We're not going to be saying this every time, we're not going to be giving this caveat every time in terms of the kind of give man to fish who eat for a day, teach man to fish who eat for a lifetime sort of stuff that we try to do here. We're not going to be kind of prefacing everything we kind of say on the data, kind of our interpretation thereof, and we expect you to know that. Obviously, as well, it's not perfect. So Even though that 6 game weeks is when I will start looking at the data and kind of thinking, yeah, okay, I can kind of make observations based on data alone and kind of hope for a trend there. In my professional life, for example, I like a base of 50 as a sample size for anything I'll quote a percentage from. And as you heard in the analytics pod as well, the likes of Simon and Jamie need 20 weeks worth of data to mess with their priors. So it's a bit of a vexed question. And you know, there's all this you snooze, you lose stuff from last season. And maybe we'll see, you know, Anthony has mentioned earlier on with the wild cards, people are jumping on the wild cards and making observational moves or moves based off kind of a tiny, tiny amount of data. You know, 2 data points, you know, if they meet up together, like that's a Benrahma, that being the cause of the decision. But I guess it's it's definitely quite an interesting question, especially when you look at kind of people like us who are quite data friendly versus others who are kind of quite ISS friendly or frankly not as engaged as we are.
Okay, taking in everything that you said about usually the need for, you know, decent data horizons, and I guess I do think back to what the lads were saying, as you noted in the analytics summer special, they were saying 20 game weeks is what you need. I'm not necessarily somebody who's like that either, and even I would feel that even after 2 game weeks, I can draw some conclusions from the data. Not huge conclusions, but some conclusions. Like at the end of the day, FPL is relatively simple. And usually what it's about is spotting the big point scorers. They're the ones that are really going to affect our rank. And so that's, you know, trying to pick out which of the elite, you know, top players do we need to be looking at, which teams look to be on form. And so I think you can look to their data of, let's say, a Liverpool, for example, and say, okay, their attack, not just Salah, but their attack in general looks to be humming quite nicely. You can also, for example, look to Lukaku. I think even on one game, and granted it was against, you know, a side that might well find themselves relegated, and you still see that Lukaku is getting chances and kind of being set up and looks more dangerous than Timo Werner probably ever looked last season at number 9. Like I feel like that's a very harsh thing to say, but I think
it's very true.
It's the position
more assured, more accomplished, you know, in that position.
Yeah, it's the way, it's not just also the way that he was getting in goal chances, you know, getting in goal scoring positions. Like his XG was well north of 1. He obviously got a very good tap in, but was very close to kind of picking up another one later on that Leno made a very good save for. And there was another kind of chance where he was, you know, inches away with his foot. It's his XA. Like his XA was huge from the game. He set up Mount quite a few times. And like that is, you know, complete striker territory that even in one game, you're kind of thinking, okay, this guy, we need to pay attention to him. You know, this is not the Lukaku who was at Man United. This is a very, very different player that we're dealing with. As well, some other data that I'm looking at already based on 2 weeks and thinking, okay, we need to pay attention. Wolves, their defense is looking quite good with the new manager coming in. I wasn't quite sure how that was going to play out. None of us were quite sure. And whilst they obviously have conceded in both of their games so far, what you see is, you know, their XGC, for example, isn't too bad considering who they faced. So like they have a mid-table XGC of kind of like, let's say 2.87 on Hub, which is what I'm using right now. You know, that is quite good in the context of the 2 games that they played against Spurs in particular. They really shut them out quite nicely. The other one I would point to is Aston Villa. Mm. Their set pieces actually are where I'm going to be focusing. They have clearly added in terms of their set pieces, and this isn't an accident. They have brought in Austin McPhee onto their coaching staff, who is Austin McPhee,
a set piece coach
who was with Northern Ireland previously, amongst others, and Northern Ireland proved themselves quite adroit at finding goals with, you know, players that wouldn't necessarily be expected to score goals consistently at international level. And if you can set up somebody who's a real kind of out-and-out finisher like Danny Ings, or even the likes of John McGinn, who's a good set-piece taker who can become suddenly a bit more of a points hive, I think that's something that needs to be paid attention to. And I feel much more comfortable actually with Ings another week later. I wasn't too comfortable after he'd kind of fluked his way to a penalty. Yeah. But after the second week, when you saw the types of goals that Villa scored, there was the long throw-in that was well set up. There was also the corner that eventually led to them getting a penalty that El Ghazi ended up taking. But that actually was all caused from a set piece which kind of forced it. And so you're like, okay, this is rehearsed. This is serious. This is something that we can take on board. And we're only looking at 2 weeks' data. But that's contextualizing. I'm taking that data on the merit very carefully along with the eye test, and I'm not relying on it. You know, like if you come 8 weeks in, I'm happy to start comparing players, for example. Like I'm looking at individual data of individual players with individual context. I'm not saying, Danny Ings's XG was worse than, you know, Lukaku's. Yeah, yeah. I'm not doing that.
Took one shot.
We can't go comparing, you know, two individual players in the league right now, because I really feel that is apples and oranges still. With 6 or 8 game weeks, as you say, I think that's when you start to get to apples and apples territory. So that's kind of how I answer it. Like I even felt like I could have wildcarded now this week off the back of the data that I had. I'm glad I'm not. I would rather have a little bit more, but even with 4 weeks of data, I would feel, you know, pretty confident. You know, where the international break falls, it's, you know, going into game week 3. I'd only have 3 weeks of data. And I think I might go with it still. So, you know, to answer Ray's question, like it's using data responsibly. And I think you can start to do that already.
Yeah. Having a critical mass of data, I suppose, is one thing. Whether I'm going to be happy to do it game week 3, game week 4, maybe not. Because of all COVID and all this kind of thing with the international break, I just don't know. But maybe the week after that, I'd be happy to do it. Maybe game week 5 or so. But you know, game week 7 is obviously the one where you kind of see, a couple of things kind of come together, which is having that critical mass of data. So it's game weeks and fixtures. Hooray! So the likes of Lukaku and City obviously got Liverpool that week, but after that they've got a great run, as I mentioned earlier on. So maybe that could be the time that I do it. But that is the orthodox week to do it. So maybe could do something earlier, could be where you steal a march on things. Use that aggression, as you mentioned earlier on. Right, so let's move on to the start of the questions this week. So Karen Tizer asked, you know, in the context of the first bag rangers of this year emerging, should we jump early or wait on the clarification about the UK government tiers when they're thinking about the game week 3 and 4 transfers? And Rishi, FPL Raccoon, a good friend of ours, said that assuming there are no exceptions granted for COVID protocols, is it time to hop off Salah for the first couple of weeks? So, I mean, I'm sure there'll be some kind of further clarification, but at the time of recording, the Premier League and the ECA, the European Clubs Association, were set to restrict players going to red list countries. So Neil Jones from Goal was saying today that Mo Salah was being restricted from travelling to Egypt for one of their games. Liverpool were okay with him going to Gabon because it was amber, which suggests that he's been double vaccinated. Anthony's probably got more information on this than I do. But if this does go ahead, there's a lot of knock-on impacts for other players going to red zone countries as well, like the Brazilian contingent. It's one to keep an eye on because it could change. So the 25th of August, there's another meeting about how this all kind of comes together. But if it's all allowed that they can stop players traveling, it kind of kiboshes that Rishi idea of selling Salah to me. I was really thinking about that. But if the international break is renormalized as much as it possibly can be in the current context, I'm going to basically eliminate that sort of thinking from my mind. What do you think about this, Anthony?
Yeah, so I was prepping to discuss this before we actually had any questions in. I kind of felt like it seemed like we got to the point where the UK's traffic light system when it comes to international travel had invaded on FPL decision-making enough that we needed to discuss it. So I just need to thank a friend of the pod, Mitchell, who's a travel industry insider, for explaining that UK traffic light system to me, so I was actually able to speak on this. So I think it's important for people to know what a red list country is. And these are countries that are considered of such high risk that even where someone is vaccinated, it's not relevant. And as a normal person who isn't, you know, a Premier League playing millionaire, exceptional sports person, they would be expected coming back from this country, from these red list countries, to quarantine in a government appointed hotel at their own expense for 10 days. That's £2,300 with meals and all the rest of it. Those red list countries include a mix of South American countries that have a lot of the gamma variant. Then you've got a bunch of Southern and Eastern African countries that have the beta variant. And then there's others with high case numbers, or where there's a lack of trust in data, or where there are high numbers of travelers coming back from that country that are testing positive. Just to give a bit of context on this, for example, though, recently the UAE and India came off the red list, yet Pakistan, which has much better metrics than India, and the UAE has daily test counts that are a bit dubious, Pakistan still ended up on the red list, in spite of the fact that it had probably better looking data than the UAE and India. And so I guess what this indicates is that there is a very political nature to this, and there is a lack of transparency to what thresholds mean that a country goes on and off these lists, which make it very hard for us as FPL managers to start predicting. You know, it's like, okay, sure, Gabon is amber today, but will it be red tomorrow? I don't know. Like, this is the thing, is that we can't be 100% certain in our planning with these things. And so it is important. So especially when we're dealing with African players and South American players, the odds are of them going near a red list country are particularly high. The European players, it's not as big of a factor. Amber list countries, we've mentioned them already, Gabon being one of them. You have no isolation periods. Drive on as long as you're vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated, you have to isolate at home, and there is testing and all the rest of it.
It's all very bit murky who's been double vaccinated and not. It sounds like Salah from Liverpool saying that Williams let him go away to Gabon.
Yes, it's quite indicative.
He's got two vaccines.
It's quite indicative, yeah, that if they're okay with him going to Gabon, then that probably says that he wouldn't be under the obligation to isolate at home. Basically. And then there are green list countries as well. Those are just drive on, do whatever, open season. Nobody's checking anything. Just come in and out. Pretend it's early 2020 or 2019 all over again. Just for what it's worth then, kind of just to hammer it home. Like, you know, there is a political angle to who is on, which countries are on this. There's little transparency. We can't reverse engineer the data to figure out which countries are likely to come on and off these lists. You just kind of have to keep your eyes peeled. There is a COVID meeting coming up this week. Which would necessarily probably pull countries on and off this list. I think it's on Wednesday, so we'll get some idea after that. But for now, we don't necessarily know. And just with exemptions as well, there's none being talked about right now, but it seems like the way the news is moving, these things are going to have to be discussed if players are to go on international duty. We have seen exemptions for essential workers in the past, even when regulations were tougher on travel. Oil workers, diplomats, politicians, scientists, business people who were working on significant deals that might benefit that sweet, sweet UK economy, and elite sports people and UEFA bigwigs have all found themselves exempt and got in and out when they would have necessarily been expected to quarantine before. It's not impossible that these players might be allowed to go in the end, but it seems like there's a kind of a PR risk with that you would have a smack of one rule for them type scenario that would not necessarily go down well with the powerful UK red top papers. With that in mind, you know, will they even let them go in the end? Is it easier for teams like Liverpool, and we've seen City and a bunch of others, to dig their heels in? It might be easier for them to do that. And it looks like they have a position that they can do that.
Sure. I mean, clubs can always do what they want effectively, as long as they do it cleverly. PR risk, great way of putting it. What we can see next week, a lot of 89th minute withdrawals with a knock. There'll be a few players maybe with a short sore back who are a bit worried about how it will go down at home if they don't kind of fess up and go to international duty. I think that's definitely something that we're going to see.
Yeah, the classic IB injuries are going to be one part of this. But I think it is interesting that, you know, the PR battle has very much been started to waged a little bit earlier than we expected. I was talking about putting this traffic light stuff into the podcast before any of this farrago started today. And we thought, I think we were kind of thinking, do we really need to do it or do we not? But I think what you're seeing is that the PR battle has begun with the clubs who are really just trying to just get off completely from sending players away in as much as possible.
Yeah. To say, you know, we're just protecting our interests, which is fine. I understand it. Like, you know, a huge asset like Mo Salah to my club. If I send him off to Egypt, he gets COVID again, and he's suddenly out of action for 3 weeks. You know, potential for long COVID as well. Like, wow.
Well, there's that, but even if even just excluding the risk of the virus itself, if you have a player who is expected to quarantine for 2 weeks and you pay them 100 grand, 200 grand a week, you know, it's like, it's just as simple as that. And so it's
it's paid leave in a contract sort of environment.
With that in mind, it totally makes sense. And it's natural that the clubs want to protect their interests. And to be perfectly honest with you, from an FPL perspective, like, it's very few, this isn't necessarily the case for teams outside of Europe, but certainly in Europe, at least, we don't necessarily have an important international break coming up.
No.
I think that isn't the case elsewhere.
It's World Cup qualifiers in Egypt, for example.
It is. Yes. And I think it's quite an important set of fixtures as well in South America.
Yeah. I think it's one to keep an eye on, basically. If it goes ahead as it is now, then, as I said, it renormalizes international break because you probably won't see players going away to dodgy places, dodgy in terms of COVID risk. And I think that hopefully we'll have some clarity this week, as ever. It was the 25th of August meeting for the UK government. Probably get something on Thursday or Friday, Mitchell said to us. That would be the way it will go. Right, let's move on to the FPL Elf question this week. He basically says, hey, I'm sat on 2-3 transfers and I've got no idea where to go with them. Can you suggest one transfer to try to ensure I don't get left behind and one transfer where I can try and actually get ahead of the crowd? Well, Mr. Elf, it's our friend Dave at FPL Elf on Twitter. Is it at FPL Elf? I think it's at Elf FPL, actually, on Twitter. I think, actually, the don't get left behind transfer this week is, funnily enough, Livramento. Because people are looking at Tsimikas, and you know he's going to rise, or will have risen, hopefully, by the time he goes and listens to this. But I genuinely think, in general, the engaged community is on a bit of a hold steady week yet again. As Anthony noted right at the start of the podcast, the template has done pretty well, aside from the likes of Ben White and Tony undergoing a fire sale. But the template is still intact. So if you are kind of trying to not be left behind, I would tend to just hold your horses here on making big moves this week. If you don't own the likes of Benrahma, Antonio, definitely buy those sorts of players in. But I think that, you know, in terms of, you know, trying not to get left behind, just kind of creating some bank value is a good idea. So either Tsimikas to Livramento, that's obviously a one for one. But if you've got kind of a player like Ben White or something who is dropping in value, potentially he could be one to bring in. If they can get ahead with the rescinding of a potential international break jeopardy, Anthony's man Rafinha or Bamford. I know Dave's a massive Leeds fan, despite not being from Leeds, is who I'd point to. Just because up until game week 10, Leeds only play Liverpool from now in terms of game top four fixtures. And either of them is a sound long-term investment. What do you think, Anthony, to that? I'm sure those people will be in the 2-3 transfers. What the hell do I do sort of boat?
I think speaking to most people who would be probably have something akin to the template, there's probably a defensive transfer that, you know, will make them want to make a move if it isn't necessarily further forward. Like the Tony is kind of the most interesting one when it comes to the real classic template team that, you know, Ings is performing, Antonio is performing, Calvert-Lewin, who was kind of on the periphery of the template, he's performing and his fixtures are pretty good as well. Yeah. And so I can quite easily see how people are looking potentially to move on Tony. There isn't an obvious answer there for who you would bring in. Armstrong, maybe, perhaps, at Southampton has had, you know, he's obviously got one goal, but he looks pretty good and he's pretty sharp. And he could have had an assist if things had played out differently with the Fred own goal in the United game as well. Also kind of, you know, looking a bit cheaper, kind of the likes of the Norwich guys, Neil Mopay would have been the one we'd have been identifying here, but there's all sorts of question marks about his fitness right now. So I think that would have been a classic get ahead, because we're talking about boring defensive picks, or, you know, swapping a 4.5 or whatever. The ceiling for what that could do for your points potential is much lower when you compare it to what, you know, a new striker could do, for example. But that said, Tony has good fixtures, and I personally don't think I want to make that move yet. Slightly more defensive, slightly more boring is then looking at defence. It's your Veltons, your Whites, or maybe even your Tsimikas, who you have banked a little bit of profit in that you might want to move. You've mentioned Livramento. That's one. Shane Duffy looks like he's going to get at least another game week with Veltman out. I had the chance to make this move and I did not do it purely because I just don't think that I want to have this problem of another transfer coming down the tracks. I think Tsimikas is going to become a problem for a lot of us soon, and Veltman is already a problem for me as well. So I basically actually needed to make a move to make sure that I had 11 players in the coming week.
Livramento is where to go.
But Livramento is fine.
We'll talk about what you've done just
in a minute. Yes, I don't want to bury the lead. I want to bury the lead. But yeah, there are other defensive moves there as well. Like the likes of Tanganga, 4.5 at Spurs. Their underlying data isn't particularly good, but you can't argue with clean sheets when they're keeping them. And I think Connor Cody, I've mentioned Wolves' defence. I think Wolves, in spite of the fact that they haven't actually kept a clean sheet yet, look quite good defensively. And I'm pretty hopeful for them, especially with a very good fixture run coming up. So that's just kind of, you know, classic defensive mood.
Fair enough. Right, next question. The Lukaku luge. So obviously we've mentioned this a few times and all of the FPL Twitter are on it. But Joshua B96 on Instagram, ask a question on Instagram. I'll put them on the pod. do it if you listen through Instagram alone. Asked what we make of Lukaku going forward in FPL. We've probably covered some of this to some extent. He asked, you know, when to jump on. Josh says he's a Chelsea fan. He's just an urge to knee-jerk him in. But he worries that prices are going to rise before that kind of vaunted game week 7 run where things kind of get really, really good. And FPL expectations as well. I'm also asked if it's worth getting him in now or waiting until that Palace game. I think I'm waiting at the moment. Maybe I will change my mind if he scores against Liverpool. Because he is a sort of player who, you know, let's make no bones about it. We said it already. Like, you know, Twitter pooed its pants at Lukaku, and I can see why they've done it, because there's a point that he can score against any team. He's like a true kind of, you know, fixture-proof sort of premium in that sense. But against him, I guess, his incoming opposition will have centre-backs who are stronger than the likes of Pablo Mari, whose constitution appears to be made up of Rivita. You know, you've got Liverpool with Van Dijk and Matip, Villa, Consa and Mings, Spurs with Dyer and probably Romero by that point, Man City with Diaz and Stones in the port. So maybe until game week 7 is the way I'll go. But you know, he had 8 shots in one game, which is the third overall for all players this season thus far, which is a bit low. And he also had 3 attempts to assist in that game, as Anthony mentioned, which put his XGI at 1.87, according to Fix, for one game. Woof. And eye test, though, I guess, yeah, I think there's a little bit of meshing to do at Chelsea as Tuchel figures out how best to adorn his newly acquired elite kind of focal point. It's like kind of making the rest of the Christmas tree pretty after buying the gem and cross with the angel on top. But he's a very scary prospect to not own. And I think that he will be one who is stalking the Twem plate for a little while. You know, if Bruno doesn't perform this week, for example, against Wolves, I'm sure people will kind of start thinking, you know what? It's time we can get rid now. So I can't hand on heart say don't buy now, but I can understand people who are going to leave it for a little bit. I've kind of got the door open, but really importantly, Talisman Theory dictates he's the one to get. So that could be the one that I do, because Chelsea are going to be one of those teams with a frightening squad who are going to be able to do it. It's just whether Tuchel can kind of make it all kind of work to service him. And you know, signs are, but it was early stages against Arsenal. But it, going forward, I'm sure it will be a different story altogether.
This is it. Like you've just described that, you know, Chelsea might, you know, they've bought the angel and they haven't necessarily worked out the rest of the Christmas tree. I think it's the complete opposite. I feel like they had the whole entire Christmas tree sorted and they just needed the angel on top, and now they've got it. And it's shining also brightly, and we need to pay attention to it straight away. And as difficult as that is for us all to face with our, you know, well-cemented tempo as it stands right now, the thing with Lukaku is, as you say, Tom, it's that unexpected data that we saw in that first game and how the eye test matched up to it. Because those numbers could have been even higher if he had, you know, like a foot that was like, I don't know, a few inches longer. He could have found his way to an even higher XG.
Or Leno's hand was slightly smaller.
Yes. Well, yeah, the XG would have been the same, but the returns would have been even more eye-catching. You know, at the end of the day, like 8 points seemed like an underperformance for him. Indeed, his expected FPL points from the game was 11 points. And, you know, I think a double-digit return would have made people take even more notice than they did of what was already a particularly impressive game. That Chelsea side, they can create chances so well. Now, they had a field day down the right that they shouldn't have through Reece. Like, Reece James should not have been given the space that he was. On the commentary that I was watching, Saka was being pulled up again and again for not making any of the defensive moves that he should have been doing. He was just kind of, he was slow tracking back. He was very good in offense. Love the guy. He's a great player and things. But maybe it's a fitness thing. Maybe it's just the responsibility he was given, which was more attack focused. But they were expecting an absolute miracle from Kieran Tierney to stop two players at the same time. And Reece James just really made hay while the sun shined. Obviously got his assist and obviously got his goal as well. And that's where an awful lot of Lukaku's chances were coming from. But also we saw plenty of his interplay in the middle with the likes of Mount to make you feel that, you know, that's the sort of thing that he could do to anyone. He won't roll centre-backs as easily as he did against Arsenal. But at the same time, he has proved himself more than adept at handling centre-backs at all variety of teams in Italy. And I wouldn't necessarily put the fact that it was Arsenal. I think it's entirely possible, and I was kind of saying this is kind of the doomsday scenario on the last pod, that by game week seven, we come to game week seven, and he has already scored 5 goals. He's already got one of those. It doesn't take a huge amount more to score 4 more goals for him. He's playing against Liverpool. Okay, granted, they've done well so far defensively. I wouldn't be surprised to see them concede their first goal of the season this weekend. Then we've got the Villa game. Villa have not been convincing defensively whatsoever. Spurs then follows that in game week 5. The thing with Spurs is that whilst they have managed to keep 2 clean sheets so far, for example, like in terms of shots conceded in the box, they're 3rd. And you might say, oh, but that's the Man City game disproportionately affecting it. No, they conceded 25 shots in the box and 14 of those were Wolves. Wolves did that. And that's a little bit concerning. Now, their XGC from those shots isn't necessarily as bad. It's still bottom half, but it's nowhere near 3rd bad, worst. And I know there's a certain amount of you can't really compare apples and apples, but the fact that they were as poor defensively against Wolves is very eye-opening to me, because that's a different kettle of fish to the Man City game, which I think you could have written them off for. So yeah, with that in mind, I just think that, you know, most of those fixtures that are ahead of them, okay, the City game, sure, that's going to be tough, but I think Lukaku can do well in all of those. I think we talk about fixture-proof players frequently, and it's obviously a limited sample size when it comes to the Chelsea game against Arsenal, but in the general sense of what we know about Romelu Lukaku from his time in Italy and even previous times in the Premier League, he can be fixture proof, and it looks like he could well be fixture proof. He certainly has a team around him to be fixture proof, and seems to have the trust to do so.
I think it's just, if they're able to just make sure everything kind of works as a cohesive unit. Like early doors, obviously, with the tap in, it was like kind of like, wow, okay, these guys can absolutely smash it. And off the second goal, it kind of slowly, it didn't quite look as fluent as it could have been. And this is me nitpicking, obviously, because of the Arsenal sort of bent I've got. But I think that is only going to improve. It's probably the only point I would make there, that there's only going to be a fine tuning of how all of the support cast can service Lukaku. Like they've been kind of running on reinforcement sort of mode and trying to make sure that they can kind of work together as a group. Now they've got kind of a focal point. Things are going to be a little bit different. They've been unashamed sort of, you know, Reece James sort of thing, or they will be kind of getting those crosses in. And maybe, just maybe, things will change. So for example, Reece James, there is a quick question here, which I will just mention quickly. If people had kind of defensive dilemmas and they asked about kind of, you know, the 5.5 throwaways, you know, Cliffy Dude asked which of the 5.5 million defenders is a setup to get for season ahead. And Hadafi asked which of Reece James or Rudiger have tickled our fancy. We haven't got time to go into it all together. And the one thing that we would say is obviously Shane Duffy is the man to buy. He's had the most shots of any defender. Wow. But I think that Reece James, in the two games he's been on the pitch, he's probably the one here. His SGI, as Anthony mentioned, is pretty high. It's 1.55. And perhaps he could be one who could be loved and left season long. If you've got a decent backup, or if you're willing to accept that every now and again, he will kind of just come on for a 1-pointer or 2-pointer, because he's a bit of a monster in that he can play centre-back, right-back, in the midfield as well, almost. But yeah, no, it's definitely an interesting sort of area, how it will go with Chelsea and co.
How are you on Luke Shaw this week, Tom?
Oh, I'm all right with him. I think we all thought that it might be Luke Shaw who would do that. And we saw how he can get into the bonus with chance creation. His corners basically provided that, didn't they? I'm not sure they're going to keep him long term. I mean, he's there for a reason, and his fixtures going forward are all right. Like, you know, he's not going to be making it into a wild card team, literally, if I was planning it to this day. But Wolves, Newcastle, West Ham, Aston Villa and Everton over the next 5, I'm not worried about any of those fixtures. Like, he could feasibly get me an assist and a goal in any of those games. I'm not overly, like, enthusiastic about him. Neither am I overly concerned, effectively. I got him in for a reason. I was always going to have United defender, and I stand by that. And I got very lucky with him getting 2 bonus points this week. But there we go. Right, next question. Tony Toss. FPL Tips asks, what do we make of Tony now? Is it the case of his underlyings eventually bearing fruit, or is he Cameron Jerome II in terms of being a bit of a tease? Ah, Tony. 18th for XG amongst strikers, beaten out by the likes of Adam Ida and Aaron Connolly. 5 shots, 2 on target so far. It's not been a fantastic start for someone who auspiciously backed himself in the media as the season began. And I'm already beginning to make covetous glances to the likes of Adam Armstrong at Southampton for not worth a million less. Have you all been catfished? I'm not sure. The eye test again showed that he wasn't quite getting those chances, but he was in the right positions, Anthony. I'm going to give him one more game, I think. But I have a real sympathy, I think, for those who are jumping ship. And what's your view here?
This is it. The eye test. He's one of the few players I found that the eye test was much, much more positive than the underlying stats. I think an awful lot of that comes from the Arsenal game, to be honest. He was much more disappointing. Granted, I only watched the highlights of the Palace game, but he was much more disappointing in that. And I think that was the one that we would have earmarked as the game that he would have got returns in. You know, spirited performances against big teams in a, you know, historic emotional game at home is one thing, but the bread and butter games against Crystal Palace are the ones that we bought him for, and it was pretty disappointing. And the fact that his underlying stats, like, an XG of 0.32 after 2 games, an XA of 0.07, like, Lukaku had a bigger XG after 15 minutes. You know, it's like, and I know that's a very reductive and
that's a leap.
It's reductive. It's reductive. It's flippant. It's silly. But it also kind of does, you know, beg a question of, like, he's taking up one of our 11 starting spaces, and do we want to give it to him? He 5 shots, like 2 of them on target. He does seem to be sometimes a foot off. There was one chance in particular he didn't get a header. It was, he was well teed up and then he just didn't get sent off. It was who gave him the pass? It was McGarthy, I think, sent a pass over towards him and he just couldn't get to it. And it was the way he was muscled off. It was kind of very unusual, I would say, for a Premier League striker. And like, this is drawing so many conclusions from one moment, and I fully appreciate that. But it kind of made me go, okay, that's unusual. Because I've used my free transfer already, it wasn't on him, as I continue to tease this bloody transfer. It wasn't on him, but I must say, I'm really tempted to. If Neil Mopay hadn't got injured, I think it could easily have been him. You've mentioned Armstrong. I've mentioned Armstrong. He's kind of the player that I think is the most tempting. He's a 6.0, and he's away to Newcastle next, and has West Ham after that. Whereas with Tony, you're looking at the Villa game, and then it's Brighton and Wolves, both of whom I have now kind of touted their defensive stats. So I kind of have to, you know, nail my flag to the mast on that. It would be surprising for him to get more than one against either of those, having got nothing in the previous games. But again, we're drawing an awful lot of conclusions from 2 games, one of which he did look very good in, just the underlying stats weren't there. The second one, disappointing, but everyone has an off day as well. Yeah. And I don't want to get too reactive. If we can avoid it,
I'm giving him one more week. But yeah. I completely agree about the caveat about the upcoming futures. And I look at my team and think, hang on, he's playing players who are in my team, are going to be in my team. And I kind of think, yeah, this was the time for Tony, and it's not quite happened.
We gave him 3 weeks. Yeah, we got him for those 3 weeks, and there's a third one coming, and already we're starting to get itchy fingers.
Yeah, all behind the player being very confident in himself. That's great. All behind everybody being confident in themselves, but if it was like, it's not been backed up by any end product. So,
well, look, I don't want to be seen sound like I'm being too harsh on him. Like, I still think he could easily be a, you know, 10 or 15 goal season merchant. We just haven't seen enough to say that, and there are players who are returning and who are looking a little bit more dangerous in teams that look a little bit more threatening in a general sense overall, that are just a bit more tempting. Or indeed, like, there are midfielders especially that I might want to get instead. I don't want to sell Alan, but you know, you could get 2 million and sell Alan. You know,
I think I'm looking at the original prankster, like the original kind of Brentford, which is Leeds, and looking at the original prankster in terms of Bamford and thinking, well, I'm all that now because I've done Gundogan to Benrahma. I can do that.
Yep.
That could be what I do next week. Not this week. I'm going to give him one more week. But hey, right. We've been trailing a transfer, and it's the most boring transfer I think I've ever heard of. Like, genuinely, I'm really sorry for the letdown here. I blame Anthony completely. But Jimmy DeClaret at Claret FPL asks, what do you think about Wolves' assets given their fixture swing? Specifically, Jimenez and Cody. He does say about Semedo as well, but Semedo's in some legal trouble, so we're going to leave that one be. But Jimenez and Cody, and a few others. Obviously, Adama Traore is in the meta a little bit. I mean, Wolves have had the second most shots in the Premier League thus far. admittedly mostly Adama Traore, who could go to Spurs. Doubt it, but he could.
He could also shoot a ball into space.
Exactly. He seems to be a massive stats merchant without any end product. They've made the fourth most crosses, and they're actually the second for successful crosses made. Jimenez could eventually get under one. All eight of Jimenez's shots, I mean, I do love Jimenez a lot, but I think he's very rusty, and understandably, and will need to a bit of time to perfect his party trick of scoring that sole goal, which keeps Wolves afloat. And nabbing all three bones in the process. Remember the meme for Honest Jimmy? It ain't much for his honest work. He's had 8 shots in the box so far this season, second for shots in the box, but amongst all players, none of those shots been on target. So there you go. The fixtures do turn considerably. So after game week 4, no top 4 team after United. But defensively, Anthony, there's been one transfer made, the most sexy transfer I could ever envision. What is it? Who have you brought in and why?
I have sold the popular but the much discussed Ben White, who is still 4.5, but according to some of the forecasts, is forecast to become a 4.4 before the sun goes up again in this part of the world. So in a bid to avoid the price drop and in a bid to try and get more points, I have decided to get Connor Cody into my FPL team for Mr. White. Why? A, the fixtures that you've mentioned. B, I just feel like Wolves' defence is looking quite good. Against Spurs, they may have lost. They may have lost 1-0. But my goodness, they were dominant. And they really did shut them out really well. It looks like they have a good cohesive unit there with that kind of 3-man back line. Unlike some of the other teams that have tried to play 3 at the back this year, they're not surrendering a huge amount of space on the flanks. It's quite promising. It looks pretty cohesive. You know, their XGC, they obviously have conceded twice so far this term, but their XGC is in distinctly mid-table. And then when you look at it in terms of shots in the box conceded, it's a little bit better again. Like they've only conceded 13 shots in the box, for example. And, you know, there's basically a whole host of teams that are kind of in and around that. Your West Ham, your Watfords, your Palaces, your Everton. But I think it's just kind of the nature of like some of the chances that they have given up were particularly high XG. They were finished, basically. And that has meant that, you know, they haven't got the return so far. But I think the underlying stuff is there to suggest that we can be hopeful for them going forward. And so I have made that transfer to try and get ahead. I could have got the likes of Duffy in. It would have been a move, you know, I have Veltman already. The news has come through. It would have been very on brand, but like I'd have had 3 Brighton players in my team, all of them defenders, and I'd have found myself tripled up on Brighton someday. I just didn't want to do it. I wasn't up for it. At the time, we weren't aware that Veltman was going to be 100% ruled out of the coming game week. I already have Sanchez to get me my Brighton points. I didn't feel too tempted to load up on it. And so I went with Cody just to kind of avoid it. The captaincy is a slightly more thorny issue this week. I think a lot of people feel a little bit burnt by how Bruno performed against in the previous game against Southampton. And indeed, United were quite flat. At the same time, in spite of everything I've just said about Wolves, I think between Fernandes and Salah, right now I am leaning towards the Fernandes captaincy. As much as anything, that's just because I don't want to take a risk and I feel like that's where the majority are going to go.
Okay. Let's go on to that just now.
Yeah, we're getting into the word. Yeah, where I'm bringing us. It is. We're very much in transfers and captains at this point. And with that in mind, like I feel like, do you want to have your Fernandes captaincy and just to be safe? I think so. Like you've got the chip with Salah, you've got the against old club trope. You've got the, you know, can do it against anyone trope. You've also got the Chelsea are probably the best defense in the league. And I don't necessarily think I want to captain against that ever. And so with that in mind, I think Fernandes is the one there. That said, I can see why, especially off the back of the last 2 game weeks, people are looking at Mikel Antonio and going, Crystal Palace, it's the first differential captain of the season. It'll be interesting to see, Tom, where the algorithms drag you, because I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe as well, against Brentford could be another one.
Surprised if the algorithms drag you there by comparison, underlying wise. I think they'll point you towards Palace.
So you've made your move already. Captain Fernandez, probably. I mean, I'm in a similar kind of boat. I'm going to try to not make any moves this week if I possibly can, unless I decide to wild card in game week 4 after international break, which is unlikely at this point. I think I like having the kind of the 2-3 chances because it's not gone too badly this week. And those 2-3 chances on international break should probably sort things out. This week, my bench is a bit ropey, but you know, there it is. My bench this week is Tsimikas, Gibbs White, and White himself. Last week, I had 1 point over 4 players on my bench, which is always nice to hear because you've done it right. I don't really want to make changes as well because I've been on the receiving end of I can't believe I went with him early doors and sold him before he returned that moan many times. So I'm willing to trust my squad one more game before I think about what I can do with 2-3 transfers, having had the success with Gundogan to Bumrama. Captains wise, as you kind of alluded to, Anthony, it's close for Mikel, which is the transfer algorithm. I'm not too sure what I'm going to do with that yet. If it's between Salah and Bruno, if it's kind of, you know, within less than 1 point, I'm probably going to go with Bruno because I feel like Wolves are less likely to keep United out than Chelsea. And I think it's more likely Liverpool have a ball draw. But it is, as you said, a good week to have a punt. So I can see a lot of kind of, it feels like a bit of an upcoming split pin week. But I think it'd be nice to have kind of the certainty, or at least the kind of the perceived security of a Bruno captaincy to end it with. So I think that'll be where I'll go with all of that.
Yeah, this does seem like the classic week where people start to overthink and then suddenly Bruno goes and gets a penalty and returns like an 11 or 12 pointer.
Yeah,
and everyone ends up, you know, staring at themselves, feeling terrible in the evening.
That's the last game week, like, he was unlucky. There was like a couple of good saves from him, like a couple of kind of combinations didn't pay off. It didn't quite show up in the data, but if you watch the game, he was always incredibly dangerous. And you know, on another day, that's a goal and 2 assists from him. So you'd be hoping that happens versus Wolves. If it doesn't, then, you know, whatever. Like my team's pretty good around the edges. Obviously, I've got Salah and TAA against Chelsea. I've got Shimmer Castles on my bench. But I mean, you're going to have weeks like this and you're going to see people maybe fall off this week as well. Because if it's a low scoring week and a low average scoring week and it kind of happens, it does kind of like it could be one of those. I'm lucky enough to have Ayling, for example, to replace Tsimikas with as I planned. It could be one of those weeks. But I mean, it's also a good week to roll transfer. And you can see where people are doing a bridging move this week in terms of Tsimikas to Livramento or something because, like, you know, it's the week before the international break. You want 2-3 transfers across international break. So this time I will roll it. Like, I was a bit annoyed that I was a transfer behind because of Gundogan. Obviously, I shouldn't have been, but I'm now 10 points up from making that transfer. So I'm more than happy with the situation I'm in. It's one of those, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe one thing I should have said. I did feel like I was forced into my transfer. Just what you were saying kind of made me think Tsimikas is now a problem that I feel like he might not play anymore. That put me down to 4 defenders. Veltman is fully ruled out. But look, I didn't think he was going to play this week anyway. That was bringing me down to 3 defenders. And then White had COVID. That was bringing me down to 2 defenders. So I was going to end up playing 10 men. So I had to move somebody on. So I decided to move on White when given that choice, because he was the one who looked like he was going to fall in price first. As it's transpired now, the algorithms are suggesting that indeed both White and Veltman could find themselves falling in price pretty soon. We'll see whether that happens. Tsimikas is on course to rise. I'd be quite tempted, I think, if we were a week further on, to actually pull the wild card just to like make the most of all these movements in prices.
I'm happy to do it. I mean, now I'm just not, because of the international break. That could like literally.
It's actually not the IB that's doing it for me. It's just the fact that it's just Ings has got one more good fixture. Actually, I think that's a huge part of it, is that there's just one more good week left in Ings. There's one more week in Tony. But I think from there, there's a real chance to shift the template and probably, to be honest, make the space to get Lukaku in. And that's probably, you know, it'll probably mean Ings goes up, Tony goes down to a 4.5. I have a little bit spare in the bank and I can actually do it straight away. And that's actually probably what's going to be the temptation to probably force me into a wild card if I don't want to, if I can avoid it. But I am entertaining the possibility.
Cool. No, I think that brings us to the end, though, doesn't it, Andy?
Yes, it does. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We were Who Got the Assist. We would really appreciate it if you could leave a 5-star review if you liked what you heard. you can watch this on YouTube if you want to see us discussing rather than just hear us. And Tom got the sexy slideshow there to keep your visually engaged as well. Correspondence, we're running a little bit low on correspondence, actually. So to keep the ammo in the arsenal of the finest slot in FPL podcasting, you got to send an email to whogottheassist@gmail.com. We would greatly appreciate if you could send something in.
Yep, thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a friend of the pod and a new entrant into the FPL sort of content creator arena, James Carroll at FPL_JQ. Should be a really good time with him. In the meantime, I hope this is you. Good luck in game week 3. Goodbye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Podcast Network.